Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry today. Well, amid all the bickering and finger-pointing in Washington, D.C. over the debt limit and the government shutdown, there is one man in the Capitol building who is speaking these days to a higher power. Listen.
Lord, when our federal shutdown delays payments of death benefits to the families of children dying on faraway battlefields, it's time for our lawmakers to say enough is enough.
That's Senate Chaplain Barry Black. He's a Seventh-day Adventist, the first African-American admiral in the United States Navy, the first African-American Senate chaplain. And each morning when the Senate gavels into session, Admiral Black has the opportunity to offer words to the Senate body. And lately, those words have become far more than generic prayers. They become something of a scolding for politicians and a conscience check, really, imploring them to put aside their petty differences and do what they know is right for their countrymen. I visited Admiral Black in his office yesterday. It's just a few feet from where I work in the Senate, just a few hours before the president signed a bill to resume paying government benefits for the families of fallen troops amid the shutdown.
We have reached a point where the time for talk is over. I spent 27 years in the Navy. I made scores of calls to next of kin to inform them that their brother, son, husband had been killed. I know the reaction of incomprehensible grief. I've seen people faint at the news, just straight away, unconscious. I've seen people begin to scream when they saw me and my companion at the door. I was the one who usually broke the news. So the idea that this federal shutdown would have the unintended negative consequence of delaying death benefits to these grieving families, that was more than a 27-year Navy veteran could take, and it was expressed in my prayer, hopefully, the fervency of my prayer, that indeed enough is enough.
You are famously a low-key guy around here. You come and go. You're not a flamboyant person at all, but people interpreted you as angry yesterday. It sounds like you were.
No, I wasn't angry. I was righteously indignant. and there's a difference. Remember, there's a story in the New Testament where Jesus put some cords together as a rope and began to overturn the tables of the money changers and said, "My Father's house is to be called the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves." That was righteous indignation. But there's a legitimate place for anger when there is righteous indignation directed toward people who are being hurt and who have no ability to defend themselves. It is my responsibility and the responsibility of anyone who is attempting to obey the command, love your neighbor as yourself, to become the voice of the voiceless. And that essentially was what I was attempting to do in my prayer.
But you also wrote in your autobiography, and you've spoken to me in the past about your childhood experience in Baltimore, in a rough neighborhood, a terrible neighborhood, with a mother who raised you right, who gave you nickels when you quoted the Bible correctly. I remember that. And quite apart from your experience as an admiral, it sort of struck me this week as you're getting a lot of attention for your prayers that some of it may come from that experience too. Shutdowns affect people who rely on the government for parts of their lives. You were one of those people. It's probably not as abstract to you as it is to a lot of people in this building.
Oh, you're right. In my book, From the Hood to the Hill, I talk about growing up on public assistance in a single-parent home. My mother had a fourth-grade education, the daughter of a South Carolina sharecropper. There were seven siblings, same dad, but he was rarely around. And it was toxic pathology. There were prostitutes on the corner. There were drug pushers On the weekends, you could hear the staccato bark of gunfire. And had it not been for the money we received from public assistance, had it not been, quite frankly, for LBJ's great society programs that enabled us to get money for school, I don't know that my siblings and I would have been able to escape the airtight cycle of poverty and pathology we were in. So I know that government can make a difference. And when government is not functioning as it should, it's disappointing, and I know we can do better, and I know that we will.
Do you think that this current standoff is fundamentally different in your mind, or is it just another fight, even though it's a big one? Is this one different?
Well, I think it's different. We had something similar in 2011, but this time it's different because when you wait until the two-minute drill to try to get the touchdown, something can always happen. There can be mistakes, a fumble, and that kind of thing. And the stakes are so high that the fact that we are repeating something that happened so recently, I think that this is different. And I hope that we will, out of this, come up with a system where we don't have to deal with this year after year after year.
My last question for you, Admiral. The Bible famously has a metaphor or a story for every occasion. People are tempted all of the time to say compromise is the way out of this. On the other hand, sometimes, many times, somebody's right and somebody's wrong. Are you informed by compromise, or are you informed by people who are wrong recognizing the error of their ways and relenting?
Well, the biblical passage that comes to mind for me in this stalemate is one that Jesus made. He said, which of you about to build a building does not first sit down and count the costs, whether he or she is able to finish? Lest not being able to finish, people will say he or she started to build but was unable to complete it. I think that that is the critical issue. What do we want for America? We talk about American exceptionalism. You know, what do we want for this nation, and have we counted the cost? If we've taken an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, then our lawmakers are committed to ensure domestic tranquility. So that's what that's all about, and I think that if we count the cost, we will find a way to resolve this stalemate.
Admiral Barry Black, Chaplain of the United States Senate, thanks again for speaking to me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. It was my pleasure being with you.
Some godly advice there for our politicians in Washington, and they could sure use it. Well, next week, we'll be taking a look at how America's relationship to faith is changing. According to the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, more young people than ever before say they've departed from religion. One in four millennials are not affiliated with any religion, describing their religion as atheist or agnostic or nothing in particular. We'll explore what this means in our series, Young Nation Under God. And as always, we want your take. Do you associate with a particular religion? Are you atheist, agnostic, religious? Do you believe that faith is still a core value in America? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We're collecting your stories all next week. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.